Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, the 2025 football signing class is now complete. Another busy week for A-State hoops. Tennis with a big road win over the weekend. Lots of winning for the track and field teams, but we're going to start with baseball because opening day is coming up on Friday as the Red Wolves will host Morehead State Friday at 3, Saturday at 3, and Sunday at 1. And as we get you ready for opening weekend, we're talking with the senior from Valley View High School in Jonesboro. It's our man, Will French. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Glad to be here.
How excited do you get for opening day?
Well, it's fourth one now, but there's nothing like opening day. It just different experience, to be honest with you.
This is a different kind of opening day for you because it's your last opening day at Arkansas State. It's practically a new facility that you're walking into now, and you've been able to practice on it here in the last few weeks with the new turf down at Slayton Family Field, the new fences pulled in. You look out to right field and see that video board. So you've been out there on this field getting ready for the start of the season, but what's it like now stepping out on that field? Is it a completely different experience for you?
We got to get on it a couple weeks ago, and me and Kaysen Tollett and Cross, we were some of the first people out there. I don't know what we were doing, but Kaysen looked over at me. He's like, I feel like I transferred schools. He's like, this is completely different. It's a different feel. You have a home, and like it's a good, nice quality field that's just as good as any field in the country now. So it's been nice to practice on it the last couple weeks, ready to play Friday.
So you guys have practiced on it, and then you scrimmaged on it over the last couple of weekends some too. So with a little bit of time on it now, how does it play? I'm gonna have you answer two ways, both, you know, from an infielder standpoint, and then two, you know, from a hitter, how's it different than what you're used to the time being?
Yeah, so hitting wise, I feel like you can sneak a couple more balls out of the yard. I don't know how many I'm going to hit, but there'll be some more home runs hit this year for sure, probably. And then from an infielder's perspective, so normally I feel like turf is really fast playing and it's pretty bouncy, but I feel like so far, maybe it's just new turf or whatever, but it's pretty true and it's not super fast. So I feel like it should be pretty good for our pitchers too.
The fences have been moved in. 325 down the lines, 365 to the power alleys, and 385 to dead center. It's always been an extremely tough park to hit in, but these dimensions make it a lot more fair. And I remember asking you and Daedric and Kaysen when you guys were up on stage at the Grand Slam banquet here in the last couple of weeks, how many more home runs do you think you would have hit with these dimensions had you had them in the past? And I think Daedric said something like 30 or 40, but there were so many times, especially on days where the wind was blowing in, where you can crush a ball at the time and it may get to the warning track. And hopefully that issue's resolved now.
Yeah, I can probably count on my hand probably 5 to 10 balls that I've hit that I feel like should have went out or probably would have went out if we weren't playing where we were playing, but it's why they play the game, I guess. I don't really know.
So besides the turf and the wall being closer, talk us through the rest of the changes. Because, I mean, there's a couple different angles. Foul ground is different. So kind of tell us what else besides the obvious.
Yeah, so the foul ground, they brought it in from the foul line. So it's less foul territory. So hopefully less pop-ups in foul territory. If you're a hitter, I guess that'd be good. The new bullpens, they're off the foul poles, and they're nice. I've never stepped foot in any of them, but probably never will.
Well, it just looks big time now, having the bullpens just down the lines and beyond the outfield wall. There's nobody that's going to be able to just park in the outfield now and peek through the outfield fence.
Well, I think they're still going to park over there and then just watch over the bullpen.
Yeah, you can still park above the bullpen. You just probably be less cars. I'm kind of going to miss it. I kind of liked all the people out there in right field, especially on a Saturday. Kind of gets a little rowdy out there.
They make some noise out there, don't they?
I'm still hoping there'll be some of that. Like I said, at this point, like that fence on the backside of the bullpen's lower, you could back up right to it.
It's kind of on a hill now because they've been messing with the scoreboard and stuff. So I guess, you can still park back there for sure. I mean, we've had people
do
it.
That's who it's intended for.
Yeah. I mean, we've had people do it for the scrimmages whenever it's cold outside and they don't want to sit in the rain like yesterday. It was pretty cold. But other than that, they got the padded walls in the outfield look really good. And, I haven't spent a ton of time out there, but I guess a lot more comforting to know if you have to run into the wall, it's not going to be splinters and wood hitting you in the head.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Before you get off that, have we had any outfielders just go out there and run into it? Maybe not full on, but just even a little bit to try to get, just to give it a test drive.
Yeah, so 2 weekends ago we were scrimmaging. I think somebody hit one to the wall, and I think Kaysen Campbell ran full speed into it, and he bounced up like nothing ever happened. So, it's a lot better. I remember my freshman or sophomore year, we were playing somebody, and we hit one to the wall, and there was a kid running after it, and he ran into the wall and got carted off the field, pretty sure.
You remember watching the movie The Natural, and early in the movie, the guy that Roy Hobbs eventually replaced – he runs through a hard wall like that. Mm-hmm. And I always thought it was the craziest plot twist that they just got rid of the character. He didn't beat him out for the position. The guy died by running through the wall. We don't have to worry about that anymore. I do want to tell your story, though, Will, because you're a Jonesboro kid that's been able to play at home for the last 4 years. So kind of tell us about growing up and when you realized that baseball was kind of your thing.
Yeah, so I started playing t-ball at 2, 3. I think you're a little kid and your parents put you in every single sport, so you're playing every single sport all the time. And I guess by the time I was 5 or 6, I had it dwindled down to the 3 main sports, or football, baseball, basketball. I pole vaulted in there at some point.
Wow.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I pole vaulted until I was like 11, I think, and then my dad was like, oh, you're going to have to pick one. And I was like, well, I think I like baseball the most. So I stuck with baseball. I quit football whenever I was little. I never really wanted to do all the tackling. I kind of thought it was kind of stupid a little bit. But no hate to anybody that likes football or plays. I love watching football, not really for me, I guess. I really enjoyed basketball. That was my dad's favorite sport. So I played that in high school. And then whenever I got to start becoming a teenager is whenever I kind of knew that I was probably baseball was going to be my option and excelling at the most. So, yeah, you go through all the travel ball stuff and you go to all these places. Man, I've marked a lot of states off my list playing travel baseball growing up. So that was pretty cool. And you meet a bunch of different people and you play with a bunch of different people. It's really a great time. So I would encourage people to do that if they really like playing baseball. So
I wanted to ask your dad, for people who grew up or around Northeast Arkansas, your dad's a heck of an athlete.
Yeah.
Like, did he play softball kind of until you got travel ball age? Are you old enough to remember going out and watching him play? What are your yes. thoughts, your recollections of him as an athlete?
Yeah, so 3-time state champion pole vaulting, I'm pretty sure. That's, I guess, how I got into pole vaulting whenever I was little. But I remember I'd travel in to watch him play softball growing up, I guess until I was 7 or 8, and then I think that's whenever you kind of start really traveling for, I guess, youth travel ball. So I guess he hung it up for me, which I'm grateful for now, looking back at it. But, I remember I would go everywhere watching him play. I spent most of my young time at a ballpark watching him play. So
they've just been so supportive. You got one of those families that, wherever we go, it seems like they're there for the last 4 years.
Yeah, they don't miss very many of them. We were adding it up the other day. I don't remember how many games I've played, but they've probably missed less than 10. And we've traveled some pretty far places, and they've made the road trip and all of them. And it's great to have a lot of support, and it's not even just them. Like, my grandparents are at most of the games too. Yeah. So yeah.
whether this is on the field or off, what have you learned from him?
My dad?
Yeah.
Just his work ethic, man. He dropped out of college to help my grandpa start the family business or whatever, and he's told me multiple times how they were one season away from going broke and all this stuff, and he's like, you just keep showing up every day and you hope it all works out, and finally it all worked out for him, and he's sitting good now. But no, his work ethic is insane. Like, yeah, waking up early to go to work every day. He's always willing to, even after work, come home and put in the time with me and my brother and sister, sports-wise and family-wise, and just providing a good life for us, I guess.
The other thing, I want to go back, because, you know, everybody knows, and Matt already said, you know, you're a local kid at Valley View, you commit to stay home and play at Arkansas State, but kind of nobody knew it, because I can remember you didn't really go on social media and post being committed. It was just kind of you guys did it your way.
Yeah,
tell me about that.
I was talking to all these schools, and I really don't even know why I'd never really posted about it, but I had committed here, and then on National Signing Day, I got a call from somebody, I guess doing a radio interview or something about it. They're like, well, you never really posted about it. No one really knew. And I was like, it's not really the way that we really looked about it. It's kind of just one of those things where it was something that had came up and we did it and just keep working at it. And it's not really anybody else's business, I guess. And it's not like something to brag about or anything like that. You just put your head down and you keep on working and you keep striving to be a better player and all this stuff.
So when did you decide you wanted to come to Arkansas State then?
I mean, before signing day, I'd been committed for 6 to 8 months probably. I think signing day was like right after COVID or maybe right before COVID, and I'd been committed pretty much the whole summer before signing day. I don't even know what day signing day is, but it's someday in the fall, I'm pretty sure, before your senior year. And I committed going into my junior summer, I think. Just never really made it public, I guess, and I don't really even remember why I didn't make it public or anything like that, but.
Well, there's no law saying you have to post it on social media, even though some people may think that you have to.
Well, I kind of thought that everybody just knew, so I mean, I didn't really want to make that like that big of a deal about it.
While you were at Valley View, you played for not one, but two former A-State players, and Josh Allison and Dustin Jones. So those are a couple of guys that were really good players in their own right, but I just learned before we started recording that even before you got to the high school level, that when you were younger, I guess junior high age, you're going over to practice with the high school team. That's something that Coach Allison kind of invited you to do.
Yeah, so I don't really know how it got started. It might have been my dad, honestly, pulling some type of string. I don't know. He's always got a good knack for doing something like that. I don't know. But he's like, hey, do you want to come hang out with the high school team, maybe practice a little bit? And I think I was young. I didn't even have a phone yet, I'm pretty sure, whenever I started doing it. And I would just show up, and some days I'd hit BP on the field with the team and take ground balls, and some days they'd be scrimmaging, and I would just sit there and watch them play. And, it was just a good experience for me, really. And I got to talk to all the coaches, Coach Allison. Brandon Eller was still at Valley View I was there.
He was a heck of a player, too.
Yeah, and I really liked him. He helped me a lot on, like, fielding-wise growing up just by being there every day practicing with the infield. Yeah, Coach Jones got there. I really don't know when he started. I guess right after Eller left.
So with Dustin Jones, with DJ, like, because of the Valley View thing and in Arkansas State, there's always been a little bit of a comparison there, honestly, with some folks and you too. What did you pick up from him along the way?
He's kind of the same way I guess I am, really. He does not really raise his voice a lot, or he's kind of just show up and put your head down and work type of guy. And he did a great job with, they're still doing a great job at Valley View, but he, infield wise, understanding that the college game is a little bit different than the high school game. And I mean, if you ever played college baseball and you go back and watch a high school baseball game, you're like, how do you ever just go from playing like that to playing like how you are now? And it's really something crazy, because it's like, it's so slow now. Even like in the moment of playing high school, you're like, this is big kid baseball, like you're playing, and you think it's so fast, and you go back and watch a game, and because I've went back a couple times and watched them play, just like some maybe like a conference championship game or something like that, and it's just like even that pretty good teams are playing each other for a conference championship, and it's so slow.
Well, and that's a really good transition, because when you got to Arkansas State, you started right away. You started every game as a true freshman at shortstop. Now, anybody who's making that jump and you go from high school to playing Division I college baseball the next year, there's got to be an adjustment period just to adapt to the speed of the game. I mean, you go from hitting 225 as a freshman to 318 your sophomore year. So I'm guessing things really kind of slowed down from year one to year two of college baseball.
Yeah, so you don't really ever believe anybody whenever they tell you that it's like it's a lot different. And I remember my freshman year, we opened up at Samford, and I think the best game I had my freshman year was my first game. I'm pretty sure I went 3-for-5, and I was like, man, this ain't no different. This is going to be a cakewalk. And then the infield's pretty much the same. I mean, the runners are a little faster and they hit it a little harder, but I mean, it's pretty much the same. But the big difference is hitting wise, it's kind of one of those things where you go from high school and you're, even the really good high school pitchers that are throwing 90 and throwing 92, they're still not able to land their curveball or land their slider or throw a good changeup and all that. And then you get to college and most pitchers throw 3 pitches for a strike and they can locate any pitch they want to throw and all that stuff. So, I mean, it was a real adjustment period from my senior year of high school going it to my freshman year of college, especially hitting-wise. And after my freshman year, I sat down and, well, my hamate bone was fractured, so they didn't send me anywhere to play summer ball after my freshman year. So I took like 5 weeks off or whatever to let it heal. And then every day I was just in the cage, like basically recreating my swing just off of a tee by myself, just trying to slow the game down and really be able to handle the right type of pitches that I needed to be able to hit.
All right. So you brought up something there, because one thing you did is start every game your freshman year. You started every game your sophomore season. And we were talking about Dustin Jones earlier, and I started kind of paying attention to what you were doing, because one thing DJ did was he played every game he was here. He's the all-time leader in games played at Arkansas State, and I thought you were going after his record because you started every game up until 24 games in last season as a junior.
Yeah.
So you started the first 123 games of your career, and then you fractured your hamate bone.
No, so actually, my freshman year, I fractured my left one in the fall. I fractured it in the wrong spot so they wouldn't take it out. And so I didn't really scrimmage any in the fall, which probably would have helped me a lot in the spring, my freshman year, being able to hit a little bit better than what I did. But
okay.
So I really didn't play very much in the fall my freshman year. I just played defense every day. And that's what allowed me, I guess, to be able to start. I guess my defense was good enough or whatever. So I played basically my whole freshman year with a fractured hamate bone in my left hand. And that's whenever I took off in the summer and I didn't really do anything. And it healed. And then last year,
it was the other hand.
It was my other hand. And okay. I actually broke it and they took it out. Like they just removed the bone. So I've messed up both of them.
Well,
I've only got,
and I didn't know you had done it before last year, but so those have been your two injuries.
Yeah, no one really knew anything about my hand my freshman year. The coaches knew and like our trainer knew, but it wasn't really made public that my hand was messed up or anything. And I didn't really want people to know and everybody think that I was blaming like me not hitting good or anything like that on it. So I just never really told anybody.
So we kind of got a little bit far down the road. So before we finish, you'll get way far away from it. We talked about you coming up, but how does one become a switch hitter when you start working on that?
So I was 7 years old. This guy, he lives in Memphis. His name's Rod Griggs. My dad took me to him. I don't know how my dad got in contact with him, but my dad took me to him whenever I was 7, and he said, whatever you do, I want you to train him like he was your own kid. And he said, okay, the first thing I'd do is I'd make him switch hit. And my dad was like, okay. So the first ever lesson I had, he made me hit left-handed, and I was so bad at it. I was like, I don't want to do this and all this stuff. And he's like, just stick with it. It'll work out in the end. And so I hit with him from the time I was seven till I even hit with him a little bit my freshman and sophomore year of college. But I hit with him probably 1 to 2 times a week, sometimes 3 to 4 times a week. He would come drive to Jonesboro and I would hit with him. And he gave lessons to a couple other kids too. But I hit with him every single week that I wasn't on like a family vacation or whatever from 7 to, I guess, 18. I mean, that's how it all started, and I just never really looked back from there.
Let's kind of go to the end of last season. I know it was a disappointing finish to the year after you were injured. Unfortunately, you had to miss 18 games. It was a rough stretch for the team during that span with you out, and then obviously you guys missed out on the conference tournament. We had the coaching change. Coach Silva comes in. Tell me about that first conversation. What was that like with Coach Silva? How did he kind of sell you on his vision and what he was trying to do here?
Yeah, so the day he got the job, he had already he got my number, and he texted me, and he was like, hey, can we sit down and meet? I just want to talk to you for a couple hours. And I was like, yeah, sure, anything. I went to his press conference whenever he was getting hired and listened to him talk, and I think the very next day I met with him. He's a straight-up guy. Like, you know exactly where you stand after talking to him for 10 minutes. So we sat down and we talked in his office for 2 to 3 hours, honestly. Like, we talked for a long time. I mean, he laid it all out there. Like, he will accomplish what he wants to accomplish.
Now, when you're talking, are you just talking about culture, things that you want to see changed? Are you talking about on-field stuff?
Yeah,
what's
so
that discussion like?
He made it really known that he wanted me to stay, like, right off the bat. And then he really took into consideration my opinion on the program and where it needed to go as a whole. And not just me. He sat down with, I mean, Kaysen and Cross and a couple other players that he knew were going to return. And we talked about everything from a culture standpoint, from where the program needed to make changes, like facility-wise, nutrition-wise, strength-wise, all this stuff. He gave me last year's roster, and he was like, I need to know who the bad seeds are so I can get rid of them. And I was like, man, you're going to make me ride out some people? And I was like, he's like, well, if you want to be good, you got to get rid of the bad apples. And I was like, yeah, I understand.
All right, so listen. I mean, obviously, I'm not supposed to ask yes or no questions. We'll ask you one. Did you give him names?
Yes.
Okay. That's it. I mean, there's no follow-up to that.
He was like, if I think some of these guys need to stay, I'm going to keep them. And I was like, that's fine. I mean, you're the head coach. You can do whatever you want.
Well, it had to do a lot for your relationship with him out of the gate to have such a candid conversation like that. I'm sure there was a lot of trust that was established that day.
Yeah. So he's like, and you're not going to trust me right now, but a couple months from now, you're gonna trust me, and we're going to build this thing into something special. And I was like, well, I want to be the team that turns it all around. And so
let me ask you, because you were local, because you had your senior year to go, when the job, in the time the job's open, like, what do you think your options are? Are you staying no matter what? Would you have gone somewhere else? Would you have just hung it up? Kind of in your head, what were your options?
I was either staying or I was leaving. I probably wasn't going to hang it up. And again, I didn't know, with a new coach, you don't really know if you're on the chopping block or not. It even played all these games or whatever, if the new coach is even going to want you. So, I mean, having him come in and like immediately call me and call a bunch of the people that I knew needed to stay and tell all of us that he wanted us here and that he wanted us to be the like leaders and turn the program around. So, I mean, once they made the hire and I had that conversation with him, I knew that I was going to end up staying, like, for sure.
He's asking you to be flexible and do whatever you have to do for the team as well. You know, that includes playing other places. I mean, you started every game at shortstop as a freshman. You've started every game at second base the last couple of years, but I know you've been kind of touring around with some other spots too. What's the plan there as far as possibilities for you in the field?
Yeah, so we've had a couple guys that have been injured and haven't really, I guess, produced not just because they can't produce, but because they haven't been healthy enough to produce. And so we've been looking around trying to get your best guys on the field, I guess is what he likes to call it. But I told him that I wanted to be a winner again. So I was like, whatever you got to do, whatever we have to do as a team to win, I'm willing to do. So I haven't spent that much time out there. Everybody has blown it up like I've played a bunch of scrimmages out there, but I've played one scrimmage in left field, and Kaysen Campbell's played two scrimmages in left field, and both of us will probably play some left field this year because, I mean, we both played infield, middle infield last year, but I figure both of us will probably spend some time out there, and, I mean, it's not that bad. It's a lot easier going from infield to outfield than outfield to infield.
Have you ever played outfield?
So I played outfield from 13 to 15, my travel ball team, we had three shortstops. So one would play short, one would play second, and one would play center, and we would just rotate it every game. So, I mean, I've played a couple of, like, I guess, travel ball games in center field, but none in left. But, I mean, it's not anything. You just catch the ball if it's hit to you. I mean, I'm going to say that, and then I'm play left field, and I'll probably drop one or something. But hopefully not. Hopefully not.
You make it sound so easy.
No, it's not easy. It's not easy. But I will say, I feel like, I don't know, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to make a mistake and somebody's going to hear this and they're going to call me out on it. But I feel like playing outfield is just maybe a little bit easier than playing infield.
If you feel that confident in it, then that's good that you're taking that confidence to the outfield. I do want to touch on a couple of things before we get out of here. Now, here in the last several months, you've become a father. So tell me how that's changed your life, your perspective going into this year.
Yeah, it's awesome. Not getting some sleep has not been so awesome. But other than that, it's been awesome. It really puts into perspective how much you appreciate the things that you do get to go do, because I feel like I don't get to go do as much things as I used to. But, I mean, there's nothing like having a kid and then, like, you're the one that's responsible for her, which is a really crazy feeling. Like, you go to the hospital and you have a baby, and then like a couple of days later they're just like, here you go, you can go home now, and then you're like, what am I doing? But it's been good so far.
You're not alone there, buddy.
Yeah. It's been good so far. She's, I don't want to jinx it, but she's a pretty good sleeper, which is really, really surprising, because my mom has liked to tell me all the time that I was a terrible sleeper. So I guess she got it from her mom and not me. So
well, congratulations on that. And obviously, at some point, the baseball is going to come to an end. So what do you see yourself doing after this season?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't really know. I mean, I've got a couple options of going to work here, going to work there.
Have you graduated yet?
Yeah, and yeah. So I graduated last year. So I'm kind of just taking some random classes right now to just be eligible to play. So I'm really living the life up, really, I guess, right now.
It frees up more time to be with your daughter.
Yeah, so I got four online classes, and what they call it post-grad exploring. They're pretty easy, I would say. So
the degree was in
ag business.
Ag business, that's what I thought. So then that brings into what? Getting in the family business?
That was one of the options, and then my dad decided that he didn't want me to work there anymore, so he sold out, so I guess that's not an option anymore. But no, probably financial advisor, probably something like that is probably what I'm going to do. I enjoy working with numbers and doing stuff like that. And it's,
you never had the coaching itch?
I've had multiple people ask me if I want to do that. And I just don't know if it's for me. Like, maybe coaching college kids, or I don't even really want to do high school kids. The young kids are really not for me. I don't know. I think I would enjoy it. They don't really have the best hours, to be honest, working. Like, I mean, our coaches are sun up to sun down type of people at the office or at the field, and I just don't really know if I want to do that and have to deal with kids along with that making stupid decisions, because, I mean, I've been there 4 years, and I've made plenty of them. So
before we get you out of here, why should we be excited about this team? What makes you excited about this team and this season?
Really, the culture. It's a complete 180. Like, Coach Silva and the new coaches that he's brought in have really done a good job of making every day a grind and putting us through the ringer at practice and all this stuff to really prepare. I feel this is the most prepared I've felt for a season the 4 years that I've been here. And Coach Silva's a fiery guy that he's going to get after it. And I think all of his players kind of mold around that and really respect it. And like, he's a coach that you want to play for and that you want to succeed for. And you got the new field, and it's just it's a new feel all the way around. And it's just one of those things where like the expectations are different in the locker room and outside of the program and inside of the program everywhere. And it's going to be good, I feel like.
Well, we can't wait to see it. Senior year starts Friday.
Yeah, it's Friday.
Head State. 3 o'clock first pitch again. Friday at 3, Saturday at 3, Sunday at 1.
Weather permitting.
Hey, it's February. We deal with that.
Field conditions are going to be fine, though.
No, yeah, the field will be fine. It's just lightning. And
how nice is it to know you don't have to worry about?
You're not going to pull a tarp.
Field maintenance, that's pulling a tarp.
That's one of the best qualities about having a turf field is no more tarp pulls. I've had countless amounts of tarp pulls at 6 a.m. 6 a.m. tarp pulls are some of the worst times and best times of your life. It's so much fun that you never want to do again.
Well, you've got that experience out of the way.
Yeah, never again, hopefully.
Will, thanks for coming in, man. This has been fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolf fans, this is DeMario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
And we welcome you back into the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Let's talk some hoops. The A-State men in action this past week as they played the final two games of their four-game road swing. And it started Wednesday at Marshall, a game in which the Red Wolves led for the entire first half. They were up 6 at the intermission, but Marshall goes on a 10-0 run early in the second half to take the lead. And unfortunately, Marshall never trailed again as they go on to win it 77-72 to end the Red Wolves' 7-game win streak. And, you know, after the game, obviously visiting with Coach Hodson, and he repeated the word tough a couple of times, and just his team needed to be tougher. Marshall out-rebounded the Red Wolves in that one 42-35, and they had 15 offensive rebounds that turned into 20 second chance points, and I really thought that was the big difference.
And just watching it kind of the way it watched on TV, I mean, I'm not surprised he used that word, but you just try to see that that game was probably played more the way Marshall would want it played. It was just kind of down in the mud a little bit, as Terrence said a couple weeks ago, maybe it was a little grimy, physical, getting there. And anyway, we're on the road, and that it's going to make things a little tougher for sure to gather with a win.
Joseph Pinion led the way in that game with 21 points. Kobe Julian had his second straight double-double with 15 and 10. Now, Troy lost that same night, so A-State is still all alone in first place in the Sun Belt standings with 6 conference games remaining. They've got a 1-game lead, but they've got a 1-game lead over 5 different teams that are tied at 8-4, the Red Wolves at 9-3. So this is going to be a dogfight down the stretch here. Now, we had another game on Saturday. This was the second game in the Sun Belt MAC Challenge. We went up to Ohio to take on Kent State, and it was a back-and-forth game, a good college basketball game. 13 ties, 25 lead changes, and it ended with Kent State on top. They won 76-75, and we called timeout with, I think, 11 seconds remaining, and drew up a good play. Isaiah Nelson had a really good look kind of in the middle of the lane. He even got his own offensive board, had another opportunity at it. Unfortunately, just didn't go, and come up short. 76-75.
Yeah, just, I mean, I got to watch the entire first half of that game and then saw the last possession. And the just, I mean, anytime you were checking scores, you know, because of the overlap with the women's game, somebody different might be ahead every time you looked, and it was seemed like it was never going to be more than about 4 points. You just knew it had the makings, it had the look a long way out of a game that was going down to the absolute wire, and it did.
They'll return home this week and begin a four-game homestand, two really, really big matchups, Wednesday at 7:30. They'll take on Southern Miss, and then Saturday at 7 against Troy. And I know we've got a couple of big events surrounding those games, starting with Howl on the Hardwood.
Yeah, so, gosh, everybody show up. All you people that want to talk about the students, be there Wednesday night, because there are going to be a whole bunch of them for both games in that doubleheader Wednesday night. So looking forward to that. And then, yeah, Saturday, encouraging you to wear black.
Blackout.
Tried to gently break it to you all here first. I'm not giving you a shirt this time, so I'm just trusting you'll show up wearing a black shirt. So do that. I'm looking forward to especially halftime Saturday night. It's going to be one of the more fun events of the year to go along with the game. But halftime is when we'll have, you know, two teams of Area 1 Special Olympics athletes out there playing.
Oh, and wow.
That's always a big time. I can't wait to see them get out there and get after it.
Meanwhile, the women had a couple of games this past week as they're right in the middle of their six-game homestand. They hosted Georgia State Wednesday on Education Day. I know you thought you'd have a big crowd with all the students in there. And, man, got 4,000 or close to 4,000 in there. Man, they had a lot to cheer about early in that game as the Red Wolves got off to a 26-5 start. They led 26-5 after the first quarter.
So let me tell you, if those kids weren't there, that'd have been one boring game to sit through. Because, I mean, just came out just blitzing, and then bless Georgia State's heart, between the game, between the score and the noise, they really gave the vibe of they would love to have been somewhere else.
And that's not a bad team. They had been playing some pretty good ball.
They had, but I noticed, Jeff Purinton's wife, Julie, was at the game, sitting down at the end of the table with him, and she posted a picture on her social media. At one point, she took a picture of her watch because her Apple Watch, basically the warning will go off if it's too loud where you are, but the volume's over 90 decibels, and her watch was going off, making sure that she was taking care of her hearing in there on Education Day.
The women went on to win 86-50 for their 11th consecutive win. That was the longest win streak in 9 years. Yep. And unfortunately, it came to an end on Saturday in the Sunbelt MAC Challenge. Took on a good Bowling Green team and are down 11 with under 7 minutes to go. They come back to take the lead, but Bowling Green able to end the game with, what, a 6-0 run, and they win it 75-73.
Yeah, I mean, actually, down 13 at one point with right about 7 minutes to go. And on the broadcast, to kind of back it up, talk about coming out blitzing. We came out and, literally went 5-for-6 from three-point range to open the game. We're up 15-5, hit 7 three-pointers in the first quarter. But to Bowling Green's credit, like, it was 15-5 before you know what happened. And then the next time you looked up, it was 20-20. They went 15-5 on their own and hit some threes. But we had 7 threes in the first quarter and didn't hit another one until about a minute to go in the third. And we're down 13 in the fourth quarter. And, you know, Carol Halford, who does the ESPN Plus with me, at one point she made a comment on the air. She goes, you know, I think it's one of those games where you're going to have to see one of those Chrislyn Rose, Arizona State-type performances to get back in this. And by gosh.
She did.
That's 16 in the fourth quarter. And kind of single-handedly brought them back in it.
She finished with 29, and you'll have to kind of walk me through it because I didn't see the replay, but heard about it. So you're down two at 75-73, and like the men, had a good look to try to tie it up and force overtime.
Yeah, the possession before, they took a corner three to try to go ahead, and then, that last play, Chrislyn got up under the basket and kind of got a shot off. It was well contested and just, didn't go in. And the truth is, my guess is, even if you ask Coach Dez, they came that close to wiggling off the hook in probably a game, she'd tell you, they didn't deserve to win and nearly won it anyway.
Yeah.
And so Look, you don't. I mean, you don't want to lose, right? I mean, they're keeping score. You don't want to lose. But obviously, if you hand anybody your schedule after January and said pick a game to lose, well, guess which one they're picking? I mean, it's the MAC Challenge game. And so as far as I'm concerned, when this team gets on the floor Wednesday at 5, they're on an 11-game win streak.
Still on a 11-game conference win streak, yep. And they're 11-1 in league play. And a couple of big conference games coming up. Final two home games of the season for the women. You mentioned Howell on the hardwood night Wednesday at 5. They'll get that doubleheader started against Southern Miss. And then Senior Day coming up Saturday at noon as they take on Texas State.
And they'll do their Senior Day stuff as soon as the game ends. They've got, I think maybe 6 seniors they'll recognize after the game.
So a split doubleheader on
Saturday. Is, yeah. It was, you know, it was a true doubleheader. Yep. And obviously the men's game getting moved to national TV now has them at noon and 7. A lot of discussion, you know, internally about the start time for the women's game and what to do. And eventually, you know, for a couple of reasons, you know, decided that the thing to do was keep it at noon. One of the things that allows our fans to do is, you know, we're selling a ticket this week, a $20 ticket that will get you women's basketball, baseball, and men's basketball Saturday at noon, 3 and 7.
That's a heck of a day.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same: you first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Red Wolves fans, this is Coach Destiny Rogers, and I'm asking you to help our student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that highlights our commitment to teamwork while raising awareness and support for our local community programs. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team letters, special gear, and exclusive access that you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T club.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes and in the future of our sports program. Wolves up.
Back one more time here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles online at CavanaughCars.com. Football team with some news this past week. The new defensive coordinator has been announced, and it's a name we already knew. Linebackers coach Griff McCarley gets promoted into that spot. You talk about a great football name, Griff McCarley.
Yeah.
Especially on the defensive side. And Coach Jones mentioned, look, he talked to a bunch of dudes, but he said sometimes the best guy's already in the building.
And the people I've talked with that are in that building, not even necessarily coaches, just people, you know, that work in there in whatever role, everybody's really excited about this decision. Not just because they like the guy, because they think he's a heck of a football coach, and talking about the role he had in our defense to begin with, and coaching those linebackers, which he's going to continue to do, I think. And so everybody I talk to is really, really pumped up about this move.
Football also announcing the rest of the 2025 signing class. Of course, we already knew the high school signees that were announced during the early signing period, but in all, 49 players are a part of this class, 26 high school players and 23 transfers, 14 of those being FBS transfers. If you want to break it down a little bit more, 21 offensive players, 27 on defense, and we've added a specialist, a punter, in there as well.
I bet he's good.
Yeah, we've been pretty good at picking those punters over the years. Indoor track and field, busy over the weekends, and they were competing at events in both Manhattan, Kansas, and Columbia, Missouri. And there were a ton of great performances, a lot of top 10 finishes. There were 6 event winners, including Bradley Gelmert, who set the facility record at Kansas State with a pole vault of 5.54 meters. And then at the Missouri Invitational, Jacob Durrell won first place in the pole vault. In fact, in that competition, the Red Wolves took 3 of the top 4 spots.
I love being good at the pole vault. That's the way God intended it, for Arkansas State to be good in the pole vault.
Will Glass won the men's 60-meter hurdles over the weekend. Kiara Strayhorn winning the women's 60-meter hurdles. And she also won the long jump. So a double event winner over the weekend. And Madison Haldeman won the women's mile and moved into 10th place in school history in that event. And just one more weekend to kind of tune up for the Sun Belt Indoor Championships. Track and field will be at different events this coming weekend in Nashville, Birmingham, and Boston. And then after that, try to go win some more hardware.
Let's do it.
How about the tennis team? They traveled to Indianapolis over the weekend and beat Butler 4-3. Coach Lama's team now 5-3 on the season, and they'll host a home competition coming up this Friday at 4:30 at the Trim Gym.
I hope they had at least one fan in the stands. Kind of, maybe, you know, Coach Lama's son plays at Butler.
You think he was cheering for?
I think
cheering for dad.
I think in the end, you know, you sometimes you got to roll what puts food on the table.
Women's golf is currently competing at the UNCG Invitational, UNC Greensboro Invitational. That's actually being played in Palm City, Florida. This is the first event of the spring season for MJ, Davey, and Shaw's team. They had a good fall.
Yeah, they did. And if they're out somewhere where it's nice to play golf, I'm jealous.
You can go watch some bowling this weekend.
Yeah.
We've got the Midwinter Invitational. We talk about all the busy stuff going on with basketball and baseball. But the bowling team is hosting their home meet at Hijinks. And that'll be this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, it would, you know, as you mentioned, tennis at home Friday afternoon as well. So it's a big week at our place. So hopefully people will come check a lot of it out. Plus, if you get the early start Sunday before the tournament play starts, so right around 7:30, bowling would do senior day too before the final day of their home event.
All right, we've covered a lot. Have we forgot anything?
No, I mean, it's just a busy week with two basketball games, and then that's on Wednesday, and hopefully everybody will come out. It's the only, you know, the last doubleheader now that Saturday's not won, so the last time to come kind of watch the teams play back-to-back is Wednesday night. It's going to be a fun environment with a lot of students. And then the weekend, bowling, tennis, and baseball on Friday, men's and women's basketball and baseball Saturday, baseball and bowling again on Sunday. So if you don't have tickets to anything, basically you could see everything for $20, because that $20 ticket's going to get you those three events on Saturday, and you don't need a ticket to the rest of it. Go watch bowling and tennis without even having to have a ticket.
No shortage of stuff to watch this weekend.
No, there absolutely is not.
Hey, thanks to Will French for coming in. I'm excited about baseball season anyway, but I think Will's got us even more fired up now, and excited about watching him play his senior season. Thanks, as always, for listening. We always appreciate you tuning in, and we hope you join us again next week for our next edition of the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and the Cavanaugh Auto Group.